goals of mine? Well, my dad is turning 80 this week. Although he seems to be superstitious about the number, so he's saying instead that he'll be celebrating his second 40th birthday. When my brothers and I were kids, our parents took us on these long road trips. 3 or 4 states we'd ride across, towing a tent trailer. My parents would sleep on one end, my brothers on the other. And lucky me, I got to sleep on the table. Yeah. But we did visit some beautiful country, county, state, and national parks. The year my father was born, 1935, Shenandoah in Virginia was established as a national park. We hiked a lot, which was irritating to my teenage self, and I vowed never to hike again. Of course, as you know, I switched that position in later years. Once in a while, you hear of someone who becomes so enamored of a park or other natural setting, they move there or plan an extended vacation to seriously absorb the area's energy. In fact, my now ex-sister-in-law was so attracted to a television magazine piece on Colorado Springs, she moved there. Jacqueline Keller left the world of academia and spent an entire winter season in Death Valley National Park.
So what was your moment when you said, I have to leave? I need to have a break for a few months, not a weekend, not 2 weeks, but a few months.
It was a very, very clear moment. I was teaching. I was a professor here in Sacramento, but our university was satellite of a Fresno campus. So I went down to Fresno for graduation services. And while I was down there, I visited friends because I used to live there. And one of the friends was someone who had worked with me at the university. And things had gotten very, very hostile in the political air of the university. And so I had dinner with him, and I was pretty much moaning and groaning. And he said, yeah, he said, you know, my life's been a lot better since I got out of that hostile environment. And I went, and I'm thinking, I got to make a living, you know. So after I left him, I was driving back to the motel I was staying in and went by the home of another friend. And I thought, I'll see if she's home. So I stopped and visited with her. I was, again, moaning and groaning. It was pretty high level of stress, and I was had kind of a steam head of anger building about the work environment. And I was talking to her, and she said, Jackie, you know, I've known you a lot of years. I've never known you to be angry like this. She says, life's mighty short to live like this. And I said, yeah, but, you know, what do I do about insurance, medical insurance? She says, well, you just buy it. Really? What's it cost? And she was paying $300 a month. And I went, And when we finally finished visiting, I had to, and I left to drive back to the motel, which was 2 miles away. Between pulling out of her drive and arriving at the motel, I said, I am done. I am out of here. I'm done. I am out of here. And I was so excited, and I was so happy. And the next day I went to graduation, and I watched the other faculty and all this sniping, and I thought, you don't know it, but I'm never going to be here again. I sat on it for a while because I'd been on the faculty for 19 years, which is
a long time.
I was a full professor. I was one of the senior professors. That, let's not be hasty. But I sat on it about a month, and I said, no, I really am done. I'm done. And so I gave notice. I won't be returning in the fall. It was wonderful.
So how long did it take for you to decide what you were going to do with your time after being so busy?
Well, I knew
7 days a week, I would guess. Being academia, you probably didn't have a lot of off time.
It is absolutely constant. Yeah, no, I knew what I was going to do because many years prior, probably at least 10 years prior, during one of my many trips to Death Valley, I had decided, wow, a lot of people who work here have had other lives, and good many of them were professionals, and they all loved working there because I just interviewed them every time I bought a cup of coffee. And so I had long since decided when I retire, I'm going to go work in Death Valley for a winter because I just never get enough of it. I never can stay long enough. And so the spring before this happened, this June, had been the 100-year bloom in Death Valley. It was just astounding. There was water in Manly Lake. People were kayaking on that. It's usually a salt flat. There were fields of flowers as far as you could see, from Stovepipe Wells to Furnace Creek, and in on down to Badwater. So about 45 miles of solid flowers. So I, of course, had to see that. And I went that time into the HR building. I'd been near it, but I'd never been in it. And I said, can I talk to someone? And I had a long chat with the director, Henny, wonderful woman. And I said, you know, so how does it work? Where can you live? Well, there's a dorm. If you don't have your own RV, you live in a dorm room. And I thought, okay. And I said, well, I'm about 5-6 years from retirement. And if you're still here, I'll be calling you. And she said, fine. And so that was in April. And so instead I called her in July and I said, it was a really fast 6 years. How do I apply for this season? And she said, what job do you want? You know, do you know what you want to do? I said, yeah, I want to work the front desk at the inn. The inn is a historic lodge. Beautiful, stunning place. Built in 1927. Sits up on the mountain, right at sea level, because Furnace Creek Ranch is 190 feet below sea level. So I knew what I was going to do. When I quit, I knew darn good and well where I was going. It was just a matter of what will I do with the house and cat. My sister was visiting from back east, and one of her stepsons, who I'd never met, had just moved to the area. And she said, I want you to meet him. I'm chit-chatting with them. And I said, you young people move around a lot. Would you put your ear out if you know any young people that are reliable that would take care of my house and my cat for 7 months? He and his fiancée looked at each other and said, we'll do it. It was that easy.
Boom.
Boom. Yeah. It was a month from the time I decided to. I actually gave notice, and in the meantime, I'd found renters and applied for a job.
So let's back up a little bit. Where did you grow up?
I'm a military kid. I grew up everywhere.
I've been everywhere, man.
I have been. 27 states and countries.
What was the longest place that you stayed at? You know, as a kid, moving to so many locations. All kids are different. Some adapt easily. Some don't do so well with it. Which category did you fall into?
Oh, it was just the norm. I did not like living in Florida, but that was because it was during the Jim Crow world, which was really a hideous thing to be part of.
Why don't you explain that to my listeners who aren't aware of that?
Oh, Jim Crow was when there was all the official segregation, and there were white ladies' rooms and colored ladies' rooms and white drinking fountains and colored drinking fountains, and people's language was very coarse about black people, and I just found it. I was 13 that year. I only lived there a year. I didn't like that. But what I loved was Yuma, Arizona, which is on the Sonora Desert. One of our long assignments, I was there 3.5 years, and I absolutely fell in love with the desert.
What a space.
It is. It's about space and form and shadows, beautiful shadows that work themselves across the mountain faces as from sunrise to sunset. They're just stunning. And I learned to be safe playing in the desert because I was a kid. So we're down playing in the desert, and I learned to be safe in the desert. It just felt very, very at home there.
So, for example, what is safe in the desert?
First thing, critters. Yeah, look out for critters. You know, rattlesnakes are very dangerous. Gila monsters are very dangerous. Tarantulas are just ugly. That if you get lost, stay under a bush until through the heat of the day. You can get moisture from a cactus. And basic stuff about stay oriented. I know my brother and I would go down and play in the desert, and probably the equivalent of 2 city blocks into the desert. And when we'd come back out just fine into town, but we were almost never where we thought we were. It's very easy to get disoriented, so you have to be careful about, because it all looks alike.
That would be me. I have no internal compass. Or if I do, it has no north. It has no magnetic north.
You'd have to be careful in the desert.
So how old is your brother? Older or younger?
He's 11 months older than me.
Just enough for he's your big brother.
Just enough, yes, for us to get in trouble together.
Nice. What was your family's last move as a family?
We were in Japan when I finished high school, and I came back to the States, to Fresno, because an old friend who had been in Maine with us, when we went to Japan, they went to Castle, because that's how military things work. And so she said, there's a school in Fresno, why don't you go there? And I said, wonder where that is. Okay. And that's how I ended up in Fresno. And I've lived in Fresno 3 different times. I came up to Sac 15 years ago because my school in Fresno, where I had been for 14 years, opened a satellite campus, and they asked me to come up and run it and get it off its feet. So I did that for 5 years here.
Well, let's talk about your career. After you graduated from Fresno, what career did you decide to land in?
Well, I had an English degree. I did graduate from Fresno. Sorry, I've been in a lot of schools. I got an English degree, and I had a baby. And then we went to Purdue because my husband was doing graduate study there. And I got a master's in counseling psychology there. And then we had another baby. And then we went to North Carolina, and I was a mommy. After 3 years in Charlotte, my ex took a position at Santa Barbara. And so I got my PhD at Santa Barbara. So I was about 35, 36 by the time I finally got my license.
And what was your PhD in exactly?
Psychology, clinical psychology. And then I had a pre-doctoral internship at the VA in Los Angeles and a postdoctoral internship with the National Health Institute in England because my husband then was in England on a sabbatical. So I was sort of, being the good wife, following around his world.
Well, tell me a little bit about working with the VA. What was your personal experience?
Oh, I don't want to be slanderous of the VA.
It helps to be honest because of all these VA,
I know,
all these vets that are trying to fight for their rights. So what was your personal experience?
My personal experience was that there's an enormous amount of interns who do the great majority of the work. So I think the veterans don't always get real seasoned care. The nursing staff is seasoned and very, very good and very committed. There's a lot of interns. I was there in 81, which was either during or directly after the crisis in Tehran, where they took all our embassy hostage. And all the yellow ribbons went up. Well, people of the Vietnam era remember that the veterans did not get parades. They got spit on. And so when I was at the VA, the veterans were coming out of the woodwork, the Vietnam veterans, saying, "Where the hell's my parade? Where are my yellow ribbons?" So 90% of my work that year was with post-traumatic stress, which was a very new diagnosis. It just came out, I think it was in 81. I know it was in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, third edition, was the first time we'd had a name for it. And that very much set the course for my whole career. I stayed in trauma all of my life. And I stayed, actually, most years I was a consultant to the vet center in whatever town I was in. For a few years, I taught a class on PTSD, which is that illness, to probation officers. I had a little business doing probation training. And then I branched out into trauma from all other things. There's a lot of trauma in human life, not just wars. Wars are just like over the top. So I was still being a PTSD consultant here in the Sacramento Vet Center until about 4 years ago.
Is there any suggestions that you could give to any vets that may be listening to the show?
Yes, absolutely. Do go to the Vet Center. The Vet Center, even though they originally were designed to serve Vietnam veterans, that's why they came into being, because that particular class of veterans were so sorely treated by the VA. The accurate diagnosis did not exist. And they were misdiagnosed as schizophrenic, alcoholic, antisocial personalities, and therefore mistreated. The Vet Center came into being specifically to meet the needs of Vietnam veterans. It now treats all our war veterans, Iraq, Afghanistan. We never are short of a war, but they still are the primary focus on trauma. So start there, and they will interface for you with the VA for other services you might need. So definitely go to your Vet Center.
So when you had that moment of epiphany that you had to exit stage left and spend, how many months was it?
I was there 7 months. That's the winter season.
And spend lucky seven months in Death Valley. That's a lot of interaction with people that are staying there, that work there, interns, I would imagine. Really? At a national park, they don't have any interns?
They might work for the National Park Service. I worked for the Xanterra. It's one of the few private inholdings in any national parks.
So what was the name of the lodge again that you worked at?
I worked at Furnace Creek. I worked at the inn. There's also a hotel at the ranch.
7 months is more than a season.
The inn where I was working closes in the summer. The ranch is open year-round, and the golf course for the truly hardy. I started on October 1st. Season starts October 1st for the winter, and it ends on Mother's Day. And there's this great inpouring of people because the summer staff are thin. there's a lot fewer people there in the summer than in the winter. And so there's like, it's like returning birds. They just keep coming in and coming in. It's very fun to be part of.
The swallows of San Capistrano.
Yes. Yes, the RVs of Death Valley.
So what was that like? Kind of a mental shift. Switching from this academia to greeting people as they came in through the door to help them on a different level.
It was incredible. I discovered things about myself and about life and about, and some things about being women and being a woman in life. A lot of that was working at the inn. I worked at the front desk, so I made reservations. I checked people in, checked them out, kept track of their accounts, helped them plan their trip. I was kind of a concierge, made a lot of maps for people, and worked as a team with the other people in the inn, housekeeping, the valet, food and services, just whoever else, accounting came once a day. So you're really part of a team. Academia is not a team. Academia is an ego fest, which is both good. And, I mean, it's good because you're totally independent in academia. You do what you want as long as you stay within some reasonable parameters, but it's definitely not a team, and academia can be pretty hostile. It may be the ego thing. I'm not sure what accounts for it. At the inn, at least the year I was there, I was extremely lucky in that we had a very, very nice team, and everybody was kind to each other. Everybody was helpful. Everybody assisted each other. There was just a lot of camaraderie, and we all took our lunch together. Actually, the supervisors would come out and say, go to lunch, and they would man the place while we all went and sat at picnic tables outside on this beautiful loft overlooking the valley and enjoyed good food and chit-chatted. And it was an amazing difference. It reminded me that workplaces can be pleasant. It was a shock.
I heard about it and I read about it.
And here it is.
Of course, you'd been at Death Valley before, but since you were working in the area, you must have heard about trails maybe that you weren't familiar with or didn't have the time to check them out.
I did. I was so lucky. I met a woman named Jane, and it was Jane's seventh year there. She worked in housekeeping at the inn, so Jane would be mopping the lobby floor when I arrived in the morning, because she came at 6 and I came at 6:30. And we just became great buds. We still see each other 9 years later. Jane is a geology aficionado, as I am, and she has a four-wheel drive, and the plate on it says, To the Mountains. And that woman will take her life in her hands and go anywhere. And so I got to go along. And I got up into many of the canyons in the Panamint Mountains, and some into the Armagosa Mountain range also. But just places I didn't particularly know were there, because I was never there with a four-wheel drive vehicle. Most of the park's on dirt roads. And we got into the Saline Valley, which is, whoa, that's a toss-up whether I want my ashes in the Saline Valley or the Panamint Valley. It's a tight call. But the Saline Valley didn't used to be part of the park. But when the park went from monument to park in 94, I think, they incorporated the Saline Valley. And it's uninhabited, and it is just starkly beautiful. So, yeah, we had great adventures.
How much geology information have you retained?
Oh, I know a lot of geology. My ex is a geology professor.
Oh.
One of my very dearest friends is a geologist with a PhD from Stanford. So I've always known I learned geology when I lived in Yuma.
So you're a rock groupie.
Well, not rocks. I'm not into rocks. I'm into geomorphology, which is the study of the form of the land. So surficial surfaces, things you can actually see. And Death Valley is rich with them. Alluvial fans, old lake bed deposits. What's that called? Platform. There's an island down at the south end of the valley where wave cut platforms all the way up this. Now it's a hill. It used to be an island in the lake. So Jane and I, yeah, we'd go out with a book and look for spots and go, ooh, ah, and then we drink wine.
That's the survivor's kit. I have it with you.
Yes. What really is a survivor kit, which we a couple times forgot to take, is a flashlight.
Oh.
It's really dark there. That was one of the things I discovered was the night.
That is a star-filled sky. And winter, as I understand it, is the best time to be there as far as looking at the night sky.
Yeah. Well, and partly because in January, the Las Vegas Astrological Society comes and brings some very powerful, very expensive telescopes, and they set them up out on the airport landing strip, and you just go out there and wander around and look at everything, and it's stunning. You learn not to go out after dark. It's not fun to drive after dark. You just can't see anything. Unless it's full moon, then you can see everything.
A moonrise in Death Valley, I imagine, must be spectacular.
It is stunning. And the Death Valley Hiking Club goes on a hike on the full moon with no flashlights. Because a lot of the land there is white, because of the salt flats or the old lake beds, and then the sand dunes. So a lot of the land is white. And when you've got a full moon shining off it, the last thing you need is a flashlight.
That's pretty cool.
It's very cool.
Moon shadows.
Yes, moon shadows.
Now, have you been back there since?
I have. Yes, I went back the very next year, and it was very fun because I got a very, very warm welcome from my old colleagues. It was really, really fun. And then I had some health problems, and so I wasn't able to go for quite a while. I was there in November, and it was as magnificent as ever. When it would get dark, and we'd walk over to, we stayed in the hotel. Of course, they didn't let me have my dorm room back. But as I would walk around in the night, I just couldn't quit smiling. It was such a wonderful experience. It just permeated with happy thoughts.
It's another home.
It is my home.
With extended family.
Yes. Well, except they all move away, you know. The people often say two or three seasons, winters. The people who stay year-round, I was talking to one of them in November. She said there's about 15 couples. There was one lady there, a gal named Sharon, who went there to be temporary, met and married a man and stayed 26 years year-round.
So, of course, the 7 months came to an end, mm-hmm. as to the season, and
Alas.
You had to return to
unemployment.
And how long were you on that?
It was a rocky 6 months because I was over 60. I found there's a lot of age discrimination out there in the real world. I got interviewed for two or three jobs that I was totally, totally qualified for. In fact, one of the interviewers was one of my students.
Wow.
But I was too old. And so you have to get on with all the insurance companies. It's just a very tedious, tedious thing. Eventually, I got a contract with social service agency here part-time, and I built my practice, and I did forensic work. Still working with trauma, and I always work with the vet center.
But you're working with different people now, so does that help?
You mean the work environment?
Mm-hmm.
It's neutral, because in private practice, you're just alone all the time. There is no, you're not working with anybody. You're seeing your clients.
So you're not getting sucked into the politics?
Oh, no. There aren't any. You might see another therapist at the mailbox.
So what's your next trip?
Going to the Great Mojave Reserve.
Nice.
Which is in this big triangle from Barstow to Las Vegas and Barstow to Needles. And with Jane, and hike and just sit and watch the desert go by. Because one of the things I learned being in the desert, one of the many, many things, was you don't have to constantly work. Our society, our culture, American culture, is so focused on competitive advancement. You know, do more, do more. That was a good job. How are you going to do a better job? And as you said earlier, in academia, you are never off duty. And in private practice, in consulting, you're really never off duty either, for a variety of reasons. So it was just amazing. My shift ended at 3:00 in the afternoon. Usually I had the morning shift. Sometimes I had the night shift. But usually at 3:00, I walked away from the desk. I'd logged anything that my replacement needed to attend to. And I was done. I was done. I had absolutely nothing to do. I had not had this experience probably since I was 5 years old. It was a bit of an adjustment at first. It's like, duh, what am I supposed to do? I lived in a single room. Didn't take long to clean that. Did the laundry while I was watching TV in the evening. And so learning that there are ways of life where people do this all the time. There are lots of jobs where people leave and they leave. And that was just a shocking idea to me. And I realized how much perpetually on duty I'd been forever. So I developed this little habit. I'd go back to my room, get out of my uniform, take off my name tag. People didn't call me Dr. Keller up there. They called me, hey, Jackie, do this for me. Yes, sir. Instead of, oh, Dr. Keller, could I please? That was different and pleasant. There was nothing bad about it at all. But I would go back to my room, take off my uniform, put on clothes, take my folding chair, a book, and a glass of wine. And there was a gate out of the compound where I could just walk out into the desert. And I'd sit down, and I'd sit there, and I'd read my book and drink my wine, maybe take my sketch pad, maybe do nothing, and watch the shadows, watch them go across the valley.
Now, as a result of that experience, do you plan now every year to make sure that you have time off to get that?
Oh, I have lots of time now. I retired 18 months ago. Now the challenge is that since I moved to Sacramento from Fresno, it's a long drive to the desert. It's really hard. And, with the reality of aging. But this time I'm doing it cleverly. I've packed my tent, my sleeping bag, and my bedroll in a suitcase, and I'm flying to Las Vegas, which is in the desert already, and then just driving out from there.
Any inspiring words you can share with those that are listening who really want to do that, but they're not sure how?
Yeah, it's partly I was just unbelievably lucky. Now, there's the great Willie Nelson song, Freedom Means Nothing Left to Lose. And because I'm single and my children are grown, and I found someone to take care of the cat, I was free to go. Not everybody has that freedom. But I think there are people who have it and don't recognize it. But you have to be willing to give up money. I had a friend there who used to be a project manager with JPL, Jet Propulsion Labs, in LA. Now, that was a high-paying job. He had a master's degree. He had an MBA. And he had given it up he was single. When he was about 45, he said, I'm not going to live to work. I'm going to work to live. And he went to resorts, especially looking for good golf course. So he gave up a lot. He gave up money. He gave up owning a house. He gave up all that kind of stuff. And he loved it. So you do have to be willing to give up.
It's redefining the quality of your life.
Absolutely.
Death Valley National Park's Dark Night Skies has led to its certification as the third international dark sky park in the U.S. National Park System. So, you should try and visit by April 18 for the ranger-hosted outdoor winter night programs. Jackie wrote about her experience in her book, Death Valley, A Winter's Journey. Do something different. Donate blood. It's needed.